I am presenting for my colleague, Dr. Felicia Lewis, who unfortunately could not be here today. And my name is Melinda Salmon, and I'm the STD program manager in Philadelphia. Just to go over a little bit about what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to go over some program history about our high school screening program and the methods, some epidemiology in Philadelphia, some trends that we've seen, the risk factor data that we have collected, the conclusions, and next steps. So our high school STD screening program was begun in the 2002-2003 school year in response to very high rates of chlamydia among adolescents in Philadelphia. Our program goals were to decrease morbidity by uncovering asymptomatic infection, but we also hope to eventually decrease prevalence. And there was some pilot testing done that showed that students would access testing and they would get treated if they tested in high schools. And when we approached the school district, they said to us, yes, you can do your program. Now, this was a long time coming, by the way. It wasn't quite this simple. You can do your program, but you cannot target. You can't target schools in zip codes with high rates of chlamydia. You need to offer it to everyone in order to ensure that there's no, you don't stigmatize any schools. So really briefly, I'm going to go over how we do this. We get together groups of approximately 60 students at a time. We do a brief presentation, which is really targeted at helping kids who are at risk recognize their risk and to test. Every student gets a brown paper bag, which in it has a demographic sheet that they must complete, a urine cup, and a card that has the phone number that they can call for their results on. And what we tell them is that everyone has to fill out the demographic sheet. Everyone has to go in the bathroom, in the stall, and in the privacy of the stall, make a decision whether or not they should be tested based upon the information they heard in the presentation. And when they come out of the bathroom, they have to give their brown paper bag with the urine cup inside it so no one can see back to the health department staff person. So just a little bit of our chlamydia epidemiology in Philadelphia. You can see we have extremely high rates of chlamydia, and the highest age group are the 15 to 19-year-olds. Our rates are going up. And last year, in 2011, we reported over 20,000 cases in the city of Philadelphia. So we set a new record there. So here is some of our high school data. Since the beginning of our program and through the last school year, we've done almost 150,000 tests on almost 100,000 students. Of these, 7.2% were positive, and almost 98% of those have been treated. Most of the treatment is done in school by our staff. We do active rescreening. Of the positive, about half have been rescreened within 3 months, and of those rescreened, about 13% were again positive. This is for people who do it. I know that you know it's very time intensive. It's a big investment from our program. We do some billing of Medicaid managed care companies, and we recoup about $150,000 a year, but it's not nearly enough to pay for the program. So I think this is similar to, I've talked to Megan Rogers about what's going on in New York. We've seen that the testing numbers are going down, the number of students testing, and we have a lot of different theories about why this may be. We've also done some change a little bit of the way we do our program. We may go to schools that have very low positivity rates every other year now instead of every year, so that may have an impact as well. We don't think by changing the way we do that we've really missed a lot of positives. We've just sort of cut out the number of tests. So this is a very busy slide, but you can sort of see what has happened as far as positivity rates by school years among males and females. And again, we've seen positivity go up in the last few years, so we kind of know that we're not decreasing prevalence, which we had hoped would happen. So until 2009 and 2010, very little was known about students who tested unless they were positive and had partner services, in which case, of course, we asked them more questions about mostly about their sex partners. Beginning in 2009, September 2009, we started collecting risk factor data on all students attending the presentation. So we asked them just to check yes or no, have you ever had sex? And we sort of did that to make sure we were targeting our presentation to the right kids. Then we added a standardized risk factor questions to the kids who tested positive so that we could sort of quantify some things about those students. And then among those questions that we asked of the positive were things like, have you ever had an STD before? We would double check that against our STD database to see if their answers were accurate with what we had. This is just a sort of a picture of what our risk assessment questionnaire looked like. Pretty basic. So here is a report out on our risk behavior data. So of these 14,031 students who chose to test in the 2009 and 2010 school year, of these, 8,765, or about 62%, reported having had sex. Of those not testing, 19.5% reported having had sex. So we don't know why those students chose not to test, even though they did report that they had had sex. Of the students who tested and stated they had sex, 657, or about 7.5%, tested positive. Of the students who tested and stated they had not had sex, 19 tested positive. And we do a lot of, you know, some of these could be false positives. We do go back and offer them treatment and retesting and all sorts of things for these kids, but these could be false positive. And those who tested and didn't answer, about 8.5% tested positive. And this is similar to some data they've collected in New York City. We also looked at student demographics by sex of the students who chose to test. As a whole, Philadelphia High School students are about 65% black, though it varies widely from school to school. And as you can see in this slide, infected male and female students were significantly more likely to be black, whether or not they were interviewed, than there were non-infected students. Infected males were approximately 90% black. Of all students who tested, 8.9% of blacks were infected as compared to about 2% of whites. So here's a look at the behaviors among our positive students who were interviewed with that risk factor survey during the 2009, 2010, and 2010 and 2011 school years. In total, 1,114 students were interviewed, which is about 64% of the total number of infected students for these two school years. As you can see here, compared with females, males have a far higher percentage of those reporting more than two sex partners in the last 2 months and a history of arrest. Close to 18% of infected females report at least one previous pregnancy. This group also reports a high frequency of previous STD diagnosis. There's also a relatively young mean age of sex at first sex. So we found some things in comparing the males and females. Interviewed males were significantly more likely to report greater than one or equal to two sex partners than were females. They were also significantly more likely to report a history of arrest than were females. Not surprisingly, considering STD rates in males versus females, males were less likely to report a previous STD. However, we wanted to look at how reliable this self-reporting was, so we cross-matched this interview data with our STD database, and we found that while 12.8% of students self-reported any STD, 23% had actually been reported to have one before. This underreporting in face-to-face interviewing is consistent with other reports in the literature. So what happened is we had all this information about our infected students, but we really didn't know what it meant. Were the infected students really any different from the uninfected students as far as their risk behaviors? So we got IRB approval to ask the same risk factor questions of the uninfected students when they call for their test results. So most of the kids, well, I would say about between 40 and 50% call for their test results, so we just had this brief survey that we would ask them after we gave them their test results. So what I'm presenting now is just data from, this is hot off the press, from September through January of this year. So not surprisingly, you can see that more males and females who have had sex in the last 3 months are infected, obviously. And then you can sort of see the results of the rest of them with the percentages there. We asked about arrest because we sort of had an idea that arrest was a proxy for impulsivity, which may also be a proxy for not using condoms or making poor choices, poor sexual choices. When compared with the interviewed students who tested negative, both male and female students who tested positive were far more likely to have reported at least one opposite sex partner in the last 3 months. More interestingly, however, other risk behaviors were only significant in females. Female students who were positive were more likely to have reported more than two sex partners in the last 60 days and a history of arrest. No other significant risk factors were found in males. So despite some of this news, I just wanted to show this slide. In our increasing steady positivity or increasing positivity, we recently, one of our colleagues, Greta Anschutz, who is here, published this data, which does show that while number of reported cases and case rates are increasing, we have seen some decrease in PID rates in Philadelphia, so we're hopeful that while we might not be decreasing positivity or prevalence, we are decreasing sequelae. So some of our conclusions, screening did not affect prevalence or percent positivity. Screening may decrease sequelae, though not definitely proven. Significant health disparities exist despite having readily available screening, at least in our high schools. Infected and non-infected males may have riskier behavior than females. That does not seem to affect risk of STD in this group of males. Infected females may have riskier behavior than non-infected females, and infected females may be our best target for behavioral interventions. So the next steps that we have for this data is to do some multivariate analysis on the risk factors from case control studies, further refine screening to target schools with a higher percent positivity to maximize our cost effectiveness, and to collaborate with CBOs and other medical communities who may have good behavioral interventions for females, although we've had a lot of difficulty in finding interventions that will accept these females. And I just want to acknowledge all my colleagues, many of whom are here today, everyone that works on our high school screening program, Greta, who helps us with our data, Lenore Asbell, Aaron Meddy, and Sheree Walker-Baban, and Regina Richardson-Moore.
Candy Hatzel from the Minnesota Department of Health. I have a question. In your last, the recommendations at the end, you said something about targeting certain schools, further refine screening to target schools. And in the beginning, you said the school districts wanted you to do screening in all the schools so mm-hmm. that schools wouldn't stand. How do you, have you been able to resolve that?
Well, if this is sort of an informal thing that we do, believe it or not, not all the schools are really welcome us in. So if we don't call them every year, they don't tend to call us either. So we've sort of just been able to, you know, quietly not go to each school every year. We might, if we were really able to identify schools at very high risk, even consider going into those schools twice a year, for example. We are going to do some additional rescreening also. We initially had stopped rescreening at the end of the school year, sort of to protect confidentiality of the students, but I think we know now how important that is. We're going to continue doing rescreening throughout the summer. So,
hi, Holly from Holly Howard from the California STD Control Program. So that was really great. Thank you very much. I just have a couple questions about your risk factor questions. Did you ask any questions about partner risks? You asked, if they themselves were arrested. Did you ask if their partners were arrested? We've seen a lot of correlations there. And did you ask if their partners had other concurrent partners, which we've also seen a lot of correlations? And then the last one was the issue with power differentials. especially in populations that have high arrest rates and et cetera, that can really affect STD rates. And the reason I bring all of these things up is because I think they're really essential and would be important in your, you talked about follow-up steps, behavioral modification perhaps, but also just, you know, broader sex health education. And there's really great proven interventions to help with power issues as well. And
so thank you for the question. Those are great suggestions. We probably did ask about information. We do ask information about sex partners, obviously, in the partner services part of the interview, but it's not collected in such a way that it's easy for us to tease out. And because we have a lot of time constraints, I'm sure you understand, the students get treated during their school day, then we're offering partner services, and there's a big push for us to get them back into class as quickly as possible, so we're really limited on the amount of questions we can ask. I mean, I think we would love to ask a lot more questions, but, you know, we try to tease it down to the ones we think are most important. But those are great things to think about. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for your presentation. My name is Caroline Davis. I'm from St. Barnabas Hospital in the Bronx. I'm running pregnancy prevention program. You mentioned in your presentation some of the students that tested positive that did not report that they were sexually active. And I guess my question is, would you assume that they weren't identifying possibly oral sex or anal sex? What did you gather, or, you know, your assumption in that?
Well, so it's a urine-based test, so it's just so we have that out there. I mean, there are false positives. We do know that. But basically what we do with these is we go back in, you know, the student will say, I've never had sex. We'll offer them rescreening. Okay, let's get rescreened. Or you can take the treatment or both. And a lot of times, you know, it may happen they come up positive again, and then they're like, well, I actually did have sex, but it was only one time, so I kind of thought it didn't count. Or, you know, they are negative again, and so we figure it's a false positive. So,
okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Maybe for a follow up for that answer, I think for the 19 students who tested positive, even they have checked that they did not have sex, when they were informed of the positive test result, some of them didn't challenge the result, did they?
No, some of them don't, yeah.
Hi, I'm Teresa Durden from CDC, and I was wondering, at the beginning of your presentation, you mentioned that sort of toward the end of the project, you quit going to all of the schools every single year, and those were the lower positivity schools. And I wondered how much of an impact, if any, that had on the positivity rates you're seeing overall for the program.
So I'm not sure I'm clear on what you're getting at. Are you saying, because the positivity rates have gone up instead of going down. So
yes.
We.
But you're targeting on higher population, that is what is going to happen.
Right,
yes.
Right, but correct. So we're just, I think the point is that we don't feel that we've missed any positives by taking out those extra number of tests.
But then you probably have a higher positivity rate then because you have conducted fewer tests among negatives.
Right, right.
And
that,
yes. Yeah, that's what
okay,
I'm getting
thank
at.
You.
Thank you.
I'll take that to our data analysis person, which is not me, by the way.
All right. Everybody, thanks for staying a little bit late.
Thank you
all. Thanks for all your attention.